Thanks for tuning in. Just a quick note before we get started. This show is not intended as medical or legal advice. While we do our best to research, the views expressed by the host and guests are opinions and should not be taken as fact. Our goal is to inspire hope by sharing the personal stories of autism pioneers who make exceptional contributions to the autism community.
Did you ever wonder if all families living with autism are pioneers, forging a unique and sometimes challenging journey into each simple everyday of life? Join Erica Daniels, mother of a teenager living with autism, as she explores conversations with those pioneering the unpredictable work, lives, and journeys of people making a difference for families meeting the everyday challenge of living with autism.
This is Hope Grows, the podcast. I am your host, Erica Daniels, founder of Hope Grows for Autism and mother of a young man on the autism spectrum who is thriving. Today's guest, Dr. Aludare Adomosu, is a visionary leader with over a decade of experience in the corporate pharmaceutical industry. As the CEO of Zalira Therapeutics, he leads the global biopharmaceutical company in its mission to revolutionize healthcare by developing and commercializing clinically validated cannabis medicines, including medicines for autism. Dr. Adomosu's achievements have earned him numerous accolades, including being named to the prestigious 40 Under 40 list and recognition as a global cannabis operator and executive to watch in 2022 and beyond. His contributions to the field of cannabis-based medicine have propelled the industry to new heights and are changing the lives of patients around the world. Welcome, Dr. O. Thank you for being here. I'd love to get started by just having you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Erica. It's always good to speak to you. And thank you for inviting me to your podcast today. And I'm very, very pleased and very, very happy that we were able to make it work. So it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Dare Adomosu. Some people call me Dr. Adomosu, some people call me Dr. O. And I am currently the Global Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer for Zalira Therapeutics, which is a cannabinoid medicine research and development company. We are based out of Australia, a publicly listed company with footprints in the United States, in Australia, as I said, in Germany, in New Zealand, in the UK and in other parts of the world. Our primary focus, we're laser focused on developing cannabinoid-based therapies, cannabinoid-based medicines, through a very unique model based on depending on which platform we're working on by way of country regulations. But our focus is the same, which is developing, rapidly validating, commercializing and advancing cannabinoid-based medicines that address a set of unique therapeutic areas that we've determined are areas of high need and very specific unmet markets. So such as insomnia, such as autism spectrum disorder, such as chronic pain in some cases, and age-related disorders, and many more in our pipeline. So it's a pleasure to be here to speak to you. We have a lot to talk about and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we do. And it's really cool to hear from someone with your background who's actually making medicine. So I'm excited for this conversation. So tell me a little bit more about your background, your educational background, your view on cannabis, cannabinoid-based medicine, and you know, kind of how you came, where you came from, and how you got to a place where you're actually making pharmaceutical grade cannabinoid medicines.
Thank you. So by academic background, I'm a doctor of biochemistry, molecular medicine, some would say. And I also hold a master's of public health in epidemiology and biostatistics. I always draw on that experience because I say that, you know, our capacity to uniquely and in a very focused way impact medicine, and the delivery of medicine in the world we live in today requires that we understand the distribution and deterrence of health and disease in any population, whether it's a subpopulation by way of a disease indication or a larger population by way of census demographics around, you know, any issue, whatever that is. So by background, I hold those degrees. I have in the more recent times, in the last, say, 10 years, people would describe me as a drug developer or, you know, somebody who's sort of brought medicines to life. Very specifically, so I cut my teeth at some point in the pharmaceutical industry, from drug development to commercialization to licensing, and different areas of highly regulated drug development and launches. But in the last 5 years, I focused very specifically and hands-on on actually leading the development of drugs that are based on cannabinoids, both from the plant itself, as well as from molecules derived from the plant. So in the last 4 years, focused primarily on building licensed programs in the United States, but also leading, since the merger of Zelda and Ilera Therapeutics to create Zelira, leading a global development through Zelira as a company. And so I do spend time, in the lab actually creating products by myself with teams across the world, develop those programs, scale them up, commercialize them. Some of them are in the US, some of them are outside of the US, as I said. So from being a scientist to an executive to a licensee or a licensor, all of those areas, I guess, I have touched one way or another in the last few years. And the biggest impact of it is touching patients and improving the lives of patients. So love it.
Yeah. And so on that note, tell us a little more about more specifically what Zelira is doing and how they're engaging with the patient communities. You know, I'm obviously very interested in the autism community, but I know you're engaging with several different communities for several different medicines or products that you have. So can you tell us a little bit more about
Absolutely. Erica, what we did and what makes Zelira very unique and what we're excited about, and in fact, one of the philosophies that frame how we think about cannabinoid is the landscape of access to this, whether it's in the platform or to medicines based from cannabinoids, is that it yet remains a very scheduled molecule. It is highly regulated, and there are different levels of that regulation depending on the jurisdiction. So that led us to the creation of a model, which we've talked about a lot, which has actually driven our capacity to impact lives through drug development, which is the opportunity to be able to launch a product, non-specifically, partner with the affected communities in the creation and customization of that drug during development, which is usually the opposite in traditional pharmaceutical drug development, you know, where pharmaceutical companies are able to go into their box, create a drug, validate it, then bring it to the marketplace. Here we have an arbitrage play within the cannabinoid space where we can launch a product, learn from that product by interacting with the communities in a commerce-based engagement, and learn about both efficacy, safety, tolerability through their self-reported use of that product. What some people would call anecdote, we call real-life empirical information about that product. Then use that to then step into a development phase where all of that data then determines how you create the formal clinical validation pathway. The value of that model is that it allows us to go into the drug development phase, which is the traditional drug development phase, with a greater level of confidence such that it may have never been experienced before. So that arbitrage opportunity really excites us. We put it to test over the last 3 years in the autism space, specifically as to our interaction with your group, which is a phenomenal world-class both advocacy, research, and education platform, talking of Hope Grows for Autism, and partnering with you as an advisor from the platform as when we did the development of Hope, the Hope range of products 1 and 2. So that model has been applied to both the autism spectrum disorder space, the Parkinson's space, and other spaces where we are hand in hand with the affected communities. And what that does is, one, it really informs the drug development based on real time, real world experience, real world use of the medicines. It allows for real term adjustments to learnings. It saves on time and cost as you move into the development phase. And fourth, it absolutely increases the level of confidence and takes away some of the guesswork that really impacts the time that it takes to bring a drug to market. So when you distill everything that I have said, you can say that it is conceivable that in the future, we are able to use real-world empirical data, real-world evidence, to fast-track the development of first-line therapies, of drugs and therapies across multiple indications across the world. So that's what Xellia is at the forefront of doing. We're very excited about it. There's a lot to come in that area.
I mean, that's amazing. It's so innovative. And it sounds like that's the way drugs should be made, right? Like, what am I, you know, it's so interesting because I'm assuming that you went this path because of regulatory and legality issues, but yet it's actually working. It's working more efficiently, effectively, you know, in all the ways that you mentioned. So I'm just like, wow.
one comment on that is, you know, once upon a time, drugs were actually developed this way, in the natural compound space. Natural compound development of drugs, for which, you know, once upon a time, all of the drugs on the market were natural compounds. I think that number is slowly coming down. At one point, it's about 80%, and now it's about 70%. This is due to advancements in chemistry, advancements in technology, which should be applauded. But, you know, but we don't ignore tools that we have in our toolbox because we have another tool. Sometimes those tools are complementary. Sometimes we can always go into the toolbox. For this type of drug development path, we have found that that model has proven, at least in our case, to be very, very one, to be very innovative. And I say that kind of looking forward because it's something that used to be done and now we're bringing it back and it works. It's been validated for hundreds and hundreds of years. But then it applies very well and can allow us to almost bend time with a greater level of confidence and be excited about bringing safe, tolerable, and efficacious medicines into the marketplace in the future.
Wow. Very nice. Very nice. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your approach to developing medicines, your personal approach. I'm talking like, you know, or your team in the lab. How does that go down? Are you kind of like, is it like, you know, when you watch a medical show and you're watching the surgeon and they have the music going and everyone's sort of like jamming out? Or is it like, you know, what does that look like in your space?
For me, as a drug developer, you always sort of start from the scientific basis of understanding. There exists thousands and thousands of screened molecules against multiple physiological targets and mechanisms of actions that have been elucidated across multiple indications across the world. So you always want to start from a scientific basis for drug development. And then from there, they say medicine, sometimes medicine is a science, the practice of which is an art. I say drug development and drug targeting and molecular targeting is a science. The practice of also is an art. And in this particular case, in the cannabinoid spaces, as I have publicly spoken about, is that we're excited about this new pharmacology, not because it is actually brand new, but the access to it at this level in our conceivable lifetime can be considered new. Mm-hmm. We've not been able to probe, we've not been able to contemplate and to investigate these molecules as we have, or as it is becoming in recent years. Countries like Australia now have it where cannabinoid research is legal at the federal level. In the US, we're still coming. We're coming along. I like to say that sometimes the US can be the craziest of them all, but it is not without purpose in some cases. What that has allowed us to do now is we can then investigate these molecules in a very similar way like we do with other molecules. Not to say that that system is by itself perfect, but that system is validated. So in a situation where you cannot apply that system directly to cannabinoid research, it calls in a little bit of creativity within that space. And to be able to look at what can you do and how can you do it compliantly to be able to get answers, and how can you advance the envelope within the opportunity that exists. So in my way of designing drugs, we always tend to think about it in those buckets is, what are we learning from the community that is using cannabinoids in so many different ways? One of the biggest motivator for repeated use and a measure, a surrogate measure of efficacy, is commerce. In a space like autism, like Parkinson's, like Crohn's, where the noise to signal ratio is very high, that means if the drug works or it doesn't work, the patient, the caretakers can tell. There's a stark difference very quickly as to efficacy, as to their measure of efficacy. It's almost that, you know, there's not a lot of margin for, it kind of works, it doesn't really work. With that understanding, it's easy for us to distill learning because we can speak to partners in the space. We can speak to the people that are on the front lines of caring for people living with autism, people living with Parkinson's, and understand how they have, by way of commerce, engaged with the products on the marketplace.
Then we can say commerce.
That means that people, commerce means that, you know, people are paying their own money.
Right.
They're spending their hard-earned money to try a solution. If that solution is not working, I don't know a lot of people who will continue to buy something that is not working.
Very right.
For their child who has autism, or for their mom who's living with Parkinson's, or for, you know, and on and on and on and on. So that level of learning is ignored by some, but not by us. Because the depth of understanding that comes from how they have adapted use for efficacy is really, really fundamental to understanding and to linking it then back to the science and then see if there's something there. So fundamentally, we can take real world evidence, which is a very, very validated way of data, of a scientific method, by the way. It's a very fully validated way of scientific investigation. We use real-world evidence in this particular space to drive how we think about drug development. Then we return back to the bench. Then we then now look at what we have by way of molecular entities that, one, either validate what we know, what we're seeing, what we're learning, or two, points us in the direction of what we should be doing. It then serves sort of as a roadmap, as a guide. What we have found is it actually is a very, very useful guide. I cringe to say accurate guide, but I say very efficient guide, because the pointing and the turn there, is it's almost, you can see it. The learning, and that's the learned part of our model. So it's not a bunch of scientists sitting in a vacuum and just, you know, chomping at hypotheses.
Yeah.
Here, you have hypotheses. You can throw that spaghetti of hypotheses against the wall, see what actually sticks. You take what sticks, you distill it down again, you create a new set of hypotheses, you throw it against the wall. And this is happening in real world sense. Mind you, we often go into traditional clinical investigations with a hypothesis and maybe some animal studies. But here you have, in a very compliant way, humans who are using a product, providing you with feedback on efficacy, on tolerability through outcome surveys, to patient self-reported surveys, some of which then give you a lean into how you can then frame your investigative processes. So to be very clear, real-world evidence is not a sidestep from clinical interrogations or clinical trials like we know them. It actually is a tool that unlocks a greater level of confidence for which you can use to get design clinical trials with a greater level of comfort and confidence that you are tending towards hitting your endpoints, which is measure of success, right? So that is the model that I have employed. That is the model that I has worked and has allowed us to advance significantly our drug development program at Xelira across multiple therapeutic areas. And always we believe also one more point on that is that innovation sometimes exists through the lens of integration. So we keep our eyes very open for how we are integrating in a very novel way that gives us additional IP, and in a lot of cases, new IP, some of which we have shared with the world. So that method, I am happy I share it with everybody, and I'm sure over time we would be talking more and more about it.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it seems like the absolute best and right way to do it. And so
it's one good way to do it.
Yes. It's one good way to do it. You're right.
Trulieve believes in providing leading information backed by experts, as well as a model for compassionate care, the foundation of the medical marijuana mission, and are committed to educating not only patients and the public, but also physicians. Trulieve partners with qualified physicians across all of our states to supply education, resources, and industry insight to empower the patient base. Through these partnerships, we are moving the industry forward and ensuring patients have access to high quality, safe, and reliable medicine.
This makes me think, you're certainly a thought leader, right, in the cannabinoid-based medicine space and pharmaceutical space, but this really takes you into my community and our community, which is you're now an autism thought leader. And the reason I say that, I know you're very humble, but the reason I say that is because there are very few people or companies that are actively formulating and seeking paths to create medicines for people on the autism spectrum. We know there's only two FDA approved drugs that are black box labeled drugs that are really just meant for irritability and those kind of specific symptoms associated with autism. But let's talk more about, and this is, something that, as you said, we've worked a little bit together on. So let's talk about more, why autism? How did we get into autism and people on the spectrum? And let's talk about hope a little bit and, why you think it's worth taking hope all the way, even to the FDA. So
sure. For your listeners, Erica, who don't know, I don't know if this is video or just audio only, for the listeners out there who are hearing me, I got into the autism space, not because I wanted to, not because I knew much about it, but because of Erica. Erica.
I can be convincing sometimes.
Yeah, Erica is the force behind our entry as a company into this space. And the story is very, very powerful. We've told you, I'm not going to go into all of it. But when you have a parent as part of a community of a group of parents who are very motivated about not just the talk around solutions, but we're looking for help for our children. And can you help us? If you can't help us, get out of our way. And the fire in the eyes says that they are motivated and you have an opportunity to tap into that motivation and partner with that motivation, magic happens. Magic by way of unlocking doors of understanding that is really driven by commitment and determination to a common purpose. In this particular case, for autism spectrum disorder, I, as a scientist, yes, I'm a product developer. I can think of, of how things work together. But I've never thought about, up until 2017-ish, thought about how that I would be designing and creating, co-creating medicines for autism. But when Erica was introduced to me, it was by Melissa Jacobs, she's a reporter. And she said, I need you to speak to this family. I think you can help them in the state of Pennsylvania program at that time. And Erica came down, we sat and I knew my world. That day, that first day, I knew my world had changed because I could not unhear what I had heard. I could not unsee what I had seen. I could no longer say that, turn an eye and say, I don't know. And I think that was the day one of my life mottos was birthed, which is when you know better, you do better. You may have heard me say that. The moment you know better, you are compelled to do better. The moment I learned that there was a lot we could do to advance the therapies, the solutions that are available to people living with autism, then I could no longer continue to do the same thing I was doing. And as you know, the rest is history, partnering with Hope Grows for Autism Community, bringing all that knowledge back into our space, using that knowledge to work, to help us frame our thinking about drug design. It led to the creation of two products called it Hope One and Hope Two. People tend to want to say, that makes sense. A friend of mine recently said, if you can sell hope, then you would be the richest person in the world. And he said to me, I think you guys have figured out how to do that. And then what's very powerful about that is we try to name it so many different things and we just kept coming back to hope. And for all the right reasons, we're blessed. 3 or 4 years counting now that those products are available in Pennsylvania, in Louisiana, in Washington, D.C., expanded to Australia, to New Zealand, soon, and hopefully to other parts of the world. And that was just the step one on the availability and launch. And the step two is since then, we have learned so much about it in both patient-based outcomes settings, but also in clinical-based settings where physicians have prescribed the medicine and collected data, and this data that data have been analyzed and reported, and we've published around it. In fact, not only have we published, other reputable institutions and centers of excellence around autism have partnered with us and written as well, maybe tending towards publication in that. All of that work is really to highlight the power of the model we built. And we've applied that model across multiple therapeutic areas. But as it relates to autism, it really, really points to the power of that co-creation, like I said, that co-learning with the affected communities. And Hope has now touched many, many lives. I mean, we're a publicly traded company, but I believe that, this information is public in terms of the number of doses that have been voluntarily dispensed in for Hope, for example, in one of the jurisdictions where it is available alone, is in the millions of doses already in 3 years. Back again to my point, to buttress the point that not only does the data that we've published say that it is working both by parents and physicians alike, through validated studies, but also through commerce and sales, we're seeing that. Then we haven't even stopped there again. Then we've now taken Hope and said, okay, we've looked at all that information that we have, and we found a way to bring it to the United States regulatory authority, the FDA, to begin that third phase of our model, which is the develop phase. So, think about it in summary. We launched the products across multiple jurisdictions. We've learned about it. We've analyzed the data, both in clinical setting in outcome setting. We've learned a lot. Now we're taking all that, we're moving into the third phase, which is the develop. And a few months ago, we announced that we have commenced a phase, a very exciting phase, a very unique phase in the development of hope, in the advancement of hope as a frontline therapy, because we are confident now that we can bring it before the FDA for formal clinical trials towards approval for use as a frontline therapy. Let's keep in mind, as Erica, you rightly said, the two drugs that are on the market, I typically, when I speak about them, I don't mention them by name because I'm not about giving a publicity. But these are antipsychotics and antidepressants that were not originally designed for autism. You mentioned that they are indicated, black box indicated, for very specific endpoints like irritability. These drugs, all they do is just, they knock these children out.
They do.
And the side effect profile go from fatigue to weight gain, on and on and on and on. And the side effect profiles are very, even in some cases, more problematic for people who are already burdened with living with on the spectrum, especially in the world that we live in today. So here we have a unique opportunity where we know in real world setting, in real patients, in real settings, that HOPE One, which is the first of our foray into the space, is safe. We've published about the tolerability through the lens of the clinical global impression and the impact on the severity of disease through the lens of validated surveys. And now we're ready to now take it to the FDA. It is conceivable that within the next 36 to 48 months, once we commence this formal trials, that if we are successful, the FDA would have approved the first drug that is actually indicated for the treatment of, you know, specific symptoms associated with autism. We don't take this lightly at all. We take this burden very, 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 very much to heart. Because when you look at the most recent data, I mean, in the last 5 years, the epidemiology of autism spectrum disorders said it was about 1 in 50-something children. Then it came down to 1 in 44 children. And as of this year, the CDC just published that it's 1 in 36 children. The burden of ASD is increasing today, and the world must meet it with therapies that not only reduce the, not only impact the symptoms, but also improves the quality of life for the people living with autism and their families. We believe that we can step into that charge with by advancing hope towards the FDA. And that is exactly what we set out to do with this. So we're very excited. We're very determined. And for anybody who knows us and how we work, which you do very well, Erica, you know that it's forward and onward.
Yeah. I like to say excelsior on and upwards. Excelsior.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite words. Well, I want to say thank you because it's not all that often that you find an individual or a company or a publicly traded company that's willing to join and walk alongside with their patient communities, right? And in my case, personally, thank you from the autism community and go for it. And look, I think, and the resources that go into it, the finances that go into it, this is no small feat, right? And the different steps that you have to take. So thank you. If nothing else, just thank you. Thank you for doing that. Thank you to Zalira for doing that. And, you know, it just makes me think, I would just wonder why, you know, why don't more companies, traditional pharmaceutical companies, biopharmaceutical companies, why don't they come into autism? And I think it's, you know, it's probably, I'm not the expert on that, but what jumps out at me is autism is really complicated, right? It's, we use this word autism and I don't really even like that word. I like the word neurodiverse. It doesn't necessarily fit everyone, but we know autism is a DSM word. And so, you know, I often think someday we're not going to call it autism. We're going to be calling it something else because it's really this, like you said, underlying collection or cluster of symptoms. And so, you know, and a lot of adults on the spectrum, you know, autism can be a wonderful, beautiful, different way of living. It's just these symptoms, these debilitating symptoms. And I think that you hit that right on. You know, you never said, or you never went out to treat this global thing. It's these underlying symptoms. So I think acknowledging that is an important part of any kind of therapeutic or pharmaceutical discussion. And so, you know, why hasn't anyone, you know, made an effort over the years? And, you know, I don't know, but thank you for doing so, you know? In 33, we're saying that actually those numbers always lag behind several years with our census collection and things like that. And so we're getting to a really narrow point there.
Yeah,
we really are. So we need solutions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Erica, thank you. I know you've been thanking me, but thank you. Thank you for standing in the front line. You're a different kind of advocate. Advocacy for you is not just a hobby around a very interesting molecule or plant. Advocacy for you has been an issue of life and, you know, it's the life of your own child. It's the life, it's the quality of life of your family. It is the quality of life as you stand and represent families across this state, across this country, and across the world. I have had a front row seat to seeing Hope Grows for Autism. Really, the word grow from 700 plus families represented in your community to over 3,000 plus and still growing. And for you, it has never been around the numbers. It has been around how do you measure impact at the grassroots. They say global impact is local. And for you, the global fight around supporting people that are neurodiverse or neurodifferent, which we continue to call autism spectrum disorder, has been local for you in every case, whether it's in Australia or is in Louisiana or is in DC or in Pennsylvania. For you, you treat every case as local. I've called many families over the last 3-4 years, and you've gotten on the phone, you've jumped on the phone with every single one of them. You've come alongside them as a parent first, and then as somebody who can share what you know. So I want to thank you as well. I want to point that compliment right back at you and say, thank you for what you do. And here you are again, not stopping, but doing a podcast to continue to educate people, to continue to keep this front of mind. I look forward and I see a time. I hope that, you know, my dreams come true. I am standing in, you know, alongside you and others. We can only do what we can. I imagine that in an ideal world, there'll be a lot more focus. But with the numbers increasing, with the understanding changing, with access to more therapies, including safer therapeutic options such as cannabinoid-based medicines, where we can then run them through the same rigor of clinical validation as any molecular entity and give them a chance to emerge and let the data is what the data will be. But when we give it that chance, I think we stand a chance at issuing or walking into a new era of safe, tolerable, and efficacious pharmacology. And that really, really, really wakes me up in the morning and excites me.
So. Yeah, I agree. And I think you hit it right on. We have that similarity. Like you said, when I came and shared my story with you, you couldn't go back to what you were doing. That happens to me. That's kind of how my work happens to me. You know, how I started getting involved in this, you know, I would get calls or messages of a family who their child's about to be sent to a facility or something like that. And I just can't keep going. You know, I've had to learn to delegate and, you know, but I have to, you know, it's just like, and it's satisfying. I have to stop and I have to do that. And so, I think finding people that are like that in the world, and making big changes like that is truly a blessing, not just for us, but for everyone who gets to benefit. So I understand that you have a new project that you're working on, perhaps maybe like a manuscript or a book or like, I don't know. Can you give us a little preview or tell us what you're working on also?
Yeah.
In addition to saving the world.
I knew that when you invited me here, it was because you wanted to get some TMZ moment out of me, right, Erica?
Yeah, total TMZ moment.
So let's put it this way. Yes, I've been contemplating a very unique experience in my life over the past 4 years. And all of those sort of thought processes have sort of added up to what is forming to be some kind of a business memoir around the last few years in the cannabis or cannabinoid space, but through the lens of a self journey on my understanding of the impact of cannabis, both in my life and across multiple touch points, my professional life, going from, I'll use the word ignorant, cannabis ignorant, to leading a global company that is focused on developing drugs around cannabinoids. And on that way, helping to build, I was the founding chief operating officer for Ilera Healthcare in Pennsylvania, and working to build that company with others and exiting that space, and what I'm doing now, across my views or my contemplations around some of the issues that affect the space and the conversations in general. So that has sort of culminated in a manuscript that I think, it's a work in progress, but maybe it would be available within the next calendar year. I believe so. It's been an exciting journey kind of thinking through it. I hope to be able to share that with the world and, certainly share it with you, Erica.
That's really exciting. The proudest moments in my life is, publishing a book. And so I think that's like a bucket list thing for a lot of people. So I can't wait to read it. I wish you the best of luck with that. That's something for sure to be proud of and check off the list.
Thank you. Thank you. This, hopefully maybe I'll be back on this show podcast next year talking about it. And some of the learning. So kind of wrote it in a way that there's something for, I'm framing it in a way that it's both a classroom and just kind of like a stage, that it creates a stage in the reader's mind to be able to contemplate their own questions, to be able to interrogate their own understanding of cannabis, of cannabinoids, of social justice issues around the matter, even personal socializations around it. And, by reading one person's unique story, that you can along the way kind of engage your own too. And yeah, so that would be exciting. Yep. And
awesome. You'll keep us posted.
Yes, we'll do.
Keep us posted.
We'll do.
So one of the things that I like to sort of bring the podcast to a close with is asking my guests, what does hope mean to you? This is such a loaded question between, us, I feel like. But, hope just shows up, for me. It's just all around me. You know that. And so I'll leave you with that. And, would love to hear what hope means to you.
Oh, man, what does hope mean to me? That's a lot. That's a very powerful question. One way I thought about that, as I'm thinking about that right now, is so that I don't go on a long, long story about it, I would say hope for me is the representation of continuity. Hope represents for me the understanding that there's more to come, that there's better to come, that if I stay on, I can approach whatever it is. And it represents the sort of revelation of more rope, and then more rope, more rope, and then more rope. Just when you're about to come to the end of the rope, it represents another line of rope appears. And that sometimes it's all that we need to be anchored so that we get up and do it again tomorrow and do it better tomorrow and seek to learn better tomorrow so that we can do it better, so we can be courageous, so that we can be faster. And in this particular case, so that we can bring all of this to bear to improve the lives of people that we serve. I am very, very confident that, you know, as the, you know, holy book for us Christians say, hope never fails. So, as the Bible says, so I'm very confident that hope just never fails.
Yeah, that's true. I always think to myself, I say to myself a lot, tomorrow's a new day. And you're right. Like what you're saying, it's like, that's real. That resonates a lot. Tomorrow is a new day. So no matter what happened today, you wake up tomorrow and start over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest today and for being an incredible, active ally to the autism community and to other patient communities. And we will definitely look forward to having you back when you're ready to promote your book.
Thank you very much, Erica.
And as always, thank you. And I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here on this platform. I look forward to coming back soon. So.